far too much publicity compared to their opponents. And everything we fought for, Amy, for over 50 years is at stake here. They're ready to do everything but tear seatbelts out of cars. They want to let Wall Street lie, cheat, and steal with impunity. They want to make sure the corporate crime wave continues to roll across America against workers and consumers and the elderly and children. So this is an order of magnitude we've never seen before. We've never seen a party so deliberately trying to repress the vote.
We have 10 seconds.
Pardon?
We have 10 seconds.
Yeah, we've never seen a party literally trying to repress the vote, miscount the vote, purge the vote, intimidate precinct worker volunteers, and steal elections. They've actually basically said, any election we lose is because it's been stolen from us. That's the word of a dictatorship party.
We have to leave it there, Ralph. We want to thank you so much for being with us, legendary consumer advocate, and Mark Green, political organizer and activist. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland settles another lawsuit against police for conduct in the 2020 protests. Progressive opponents of Oregon Measure 114 cite equity concerns. And in international news, Biden acknowledges certain concerns about nuclear Armageddon in Ukraine. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 25, 2022. I'm Eric Leuschner. Portland City Council is poised to approve a $47,000 settlement for a street medic assaulted by Portland police during a protest in 2020. Evelyn Cushing was not protesting at the event, but instead offering medical care to people at the protest. She wore a red cross on her helmet to indicate this. In video footage, Portland officer Brian Wheeler shoves her to the ground, apparently unprovoked. The legal filing says the fall permanently injured Cushing's shoulder. An internal review at the police bureau found that Wheeler used inappropriate force in this instance, but it's not clear what penalty he received for the violation. Cushing is one of at least nine other Portlanders who sued the city for civil liability in the 2020 protests and received a settlement. In total, the city has paid $325,000 so far to settle cases tied to Portland police in the 2020 protests. Oregon's ballot measure 114 would be among the strongest gun laws in the nation if it's passed this November. The ballot measure has received a lot of criticism from conservatives who say the measure would effectively end gun ownership in Oregon. But Measure 114 also has some progressive opponents who say the law may have equity problems based on the way it's written. Currently in Oregon, you don't need a permit to purchase a gun. Permits are only needed for concealed carry and are issued through local police and sheriff's offices. Measure 114 would change that, making everyone pass a gun safety course and a background check in order to buy a gun. It would also ban future sale and possessions of magazines over 10 rounds. But because the permit issue still comes from the police agencies, opponents worry it will make it more difficult for communities of color to get access to firearms. There's a documented history of Oregon law enforcement's ties to far-right groups. Opponents say police chiefs and sheriffs have room under the new measure to discriminate based on political beliefs. That could result in far-right groups having significantly greater access to firearms than other groups. They say a different measure could put a more neutral body, like the Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, in charge of the permitting process. Proponents of Measure 114 say that it's modeled after the concealed carry permitting process, and there isn't evidence that process is discriminatory. Similar laws in Connecticut led to a 28% drop in the gun homicide rate and a 33% drop in the gun suicide rate. When a similar law in Missouri was repealed, gun deaths surged. The Supreme Court temporarily blocks testimony from Senator Lindsey Graham in a Georgia election probe, and polls show signs of a red wave in the midterms. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The outcome that was reached was disappointing to those of us who supported the president, but it was done through the lawful process.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who defended the results of the 2020 presidential election in January 2021, was granted an emergency request by the U.S. Supreme Court to pause a subpoena for his testimony in a Georgia probe into pro-Trump election interference. Fulton County investigators want to know about calls Graham made to officials following the election, which Graham claims were related to his own fact-finding. The senator argues that constitutional protections for lawmakers should shield him from being forced to testify. 2 weeks from the midterms, a red wave is reemerging. A Monmouth survey shows the GOP with a 6-point advantage among registered voters on a generic congressional ballot, with more Republicans extremely motivated to vote than Democrats. However, Democratic pollster John Anzalone notes that recent election cycle polling has been unreliable.
The reality is polling is hard. The fact is that you have to have a commitment to do it the right way, and it's expensive, and most media companies won't do that.
Other polls in key Senate races show Republicans up 4 points in Ohio and 2 in Nevada. Democratic Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock is now polling just 1 point ahead of Republican challenger Herschel Walker.
I don't know if you've seen it, but our kids are behind. Yeah. They're behind because of Senator Warnock and Joe Biden. That they decided not to let our kids go to school. They had the money. They had the resources to get our kids back to school, but they held them out.
President Joe Biden on Monday expressed optimism about an 11th-hour swing in Democrats' favor. California Governor Gavin Newsom implied he will not run for president in 2024. Newsom committed to serving all 4 years of his term if reelected, countering challenger Republican State Senator Brian Dahl's allegations that he is not focusing on California.
He was out of state for a few hours to take on his party and his leader of his party, Donald Trump, who he was a passionate supporter of, and what they're doing to democracy and how they're attacking women's right to choose.
Newsom has a double-digit lead, but in the heavily democratically favored Michigan and Minnesota governor's races, Republicans are now statistically even. Two people with weapons and wearing masks were seen at mail-in ballot drop boxes in Maricopa County, Arizona. At least 2 voter intimidation complaints have been filed with the Secretary of State. Arizona is identified as a top state for election threats. Britain will have a new prime minister for the second time in a matter of weeks. Rishi Sunak received a warm welcome from conservatives who selected him to replace Liz Truss, who was forced to resign over an unpopular budget plan. The 42-year-old becomes the UK's first prime minister of color. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A new poll shows that nearly 2/3 of Americans think the federal government is not doing enough to fight climate change. That poll comes from the Associated Press. The poll indicates that the public has limited knowledge of a broad new law that commits the U.S. to its largest ever investment to fight global warming. Congressional Democrats approved President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act in August. The measure passed without a single Republican vote in either chamber. It offers nearly $375 billion in incentives to accelerate expansion of clean energy, including wind and solar power. And it aims to transition away from fossil fuels such as oil, coal, and natural gas, all of which contribute to climate change. Environmental groups have spent millions to promote the measure. Yet, the poll found that 61% of U.S. adults say they know little to nothing about it. 49% say it won't make much of a difference on climate change. 33% say it will help, and 14% think it will actually hurt us. Advocates predict, combined with spending by states and the private sector, the law could help shrink the U.S. carbon emissions footprint by about 20% in 2030. Americans are generally more likely to support than oppose at least some of the government actions on climate change included in the law. For example, the poll showed that people are interested in incentives for electric vehicles and solar panels, though relatively few said they would seek either in the next 3 years. About half of Americans think government actions that restrict companies are very important. More than 60% of Americans said companies' refusal to reduce energy use is a major problem in efforts to reduce climate change. About half said the same about individuals not willing to reduce their own energy use. Slightly more than half said it's a major problem that the energy industry is not doing enough to supply power from renewable sources, such as wind and solar. And about half said the government is not investing enough in renewable energy. 79% of Democrats thought the federal government is doing too little on climate versus 67% of independents and 39% of Republicans. About three quarters of Black and Hispanic Americans said the government was sufficiently involved compared to about half of white Americans. The poll of 1,003 adults was conducted from September 9th to 12th. 2 weeks remain until the midterm election, and according to analysis by the Washington Post, election deniers are on the ballot in 48 states. They found that election deniers make up more than half of all Republicans running for congressional and state offices next month. Ross Brown has more in Texas, home to 20 such candidates.
Early voting is underway in Texas, and many of the candidates on the midterm ballot still refuse to accept the 2020 presidential victory of Joe Biden over Donald Trump, which some believe could jeopardize the future of democracy. An analysis by the Washington Post found that election deniers will be on the ballot in 48 of 50 states, including 21 candidates in Texas. Center for Election Innovation and Research founder David Becker says that could create major problems in some states.
We could be in a situation where in some areas, candidates who refuse to accept their defeat no longer exhaust their legal remedies and then ultimately concede, but instead incite their supporters to violence.
Becker believes it's highly likely that many races will be so close that results will not be known on election night, and observers should know that's normal and preferable, because election officials are trying to get it right, not fast. In Texas, voters are able to vote early in person, but an excuse is required to vote by mail. Becker worries that tensions around the election could keep voters home, but notes the process should be easy for most folks who want to participate.
The vast majority of voters are going to find the voting process still be very convenient and familiar. 35 states plus Washington, D.C. offer both mail ballots to anyone who wants one and robust early voting opportunities.
A study by the Brennan Center for Justice and the Bipartisan Policy Center last year found that nearly 80% of the 36 elections administrators interviewed said misinformation and disinformation spread on social media have made their jobs harder. The Texas Secretary of State's office has reported that about one-third of election administrators have left their jobs in the past 2 years. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Foundation of New York.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Totality of Circumstances with Sam Bowman and Jasmine Moneymaker. At 6, it's Big Picture Science Radio. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy and cloudy with a low of 44 overnight. Tomorrow also has the potential for drizzle with a high of 55. Today in history, in 1993, an American actor and horror movie icon named Vincent Price passed away. The quote of the day is from Vincent Price, who said, quote, "Art is excitement, which if we can't create it ourselves, we can at least, through love of it, make available to others." There's a renewed push in the Supreme Court to uphold the Indian Child Welfare Act, which is in front of the court this session. Depending on how the court rules, it could have major impacts on how the federal government interacts with tribal nations. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Advocates are urging the U.S. Supreme Court to uphold the Indian Child Welfare Act. The court will consider the constitutionality of the decades-old law, which is intended to keep Native children with Native families. Mark Richardson has more.
Dozens of tribes and ACLU chapters have filed briefs urging the court to uphold ICWA. Teddy Simon with the Northern California branch of the ACLU says many tribes still consider the separation practices cultural genocide.
Anything that was indigenous about them was scrubbed away and removed.
The case was supported on appeal by conservative groups who claim ICWA gave tribal nations rights not provided to other racial minorities. Simon, who serves as an advocate for racial justice and is a member of the Navajo Nation, says many Native Americans believe that when possible, keeping a Native child in their indigenous culture is in everyone's best interest.
All kinds of studies have been done showing that Native children have much better life outcomes across all of these indicators when they have the ability to be connected to their culture and their language. And their heritage.
Simon adds that many Native Americans believe the case isn't just about children's rights, but is also an attack on the power and authority of tribal nations to defend their gaming rights, restore tribal lands to reservations, and manage their water rights in the Colorado and other river basins.
This has the potential to be the most important Supreme Court case relating to Native American people in our lifetimes. If the Supreme Court is to rule ICWA unconstitutional, would have potentially devastating impacts on tribal sovereignty and the existence of Native nations.
That was Mark Richardson reporting. Indigenous singer and songwriter Kelly Jackson of Wisconsin's Lac des Flambeaux Band is using her music to raise awareness about violence against women. WXPR's Aaron Gottsacker has more. A warning, this story deals with sexual assault. Don't ask, don't try.
It's all you can do to get by. Kelly Jackson wrote this song, Don't Speak, about a decade ago in response to a personal encounter with sexual violence.
I'm a survivor. It was my way of, like, putting into, you know, into music what my own emotional recovery was.
She started performing the song for audiences and quickly realized it resonated with a lot of people.
People would, you know, come up to me and, you know, say, oh my gosh, you know, I'm a victim of, you know, sexual violence when I was in college.
In hopes of opening up this conversation, Jackson recorded a music video for the song. It features a cast of real-life Indigenous survivors, from a military veteran to a college student to a wife and children. In the video, each woman stands alone as her world literally turns upside down.
And we had, you know, these beautiful sets, and then the whole room itself literally tipped backwards 90 degrees. So everything falls. And it's like that point where chaos, where you find yourself kind of all lost in this chaotic moment. And I think for me, watching that wall come back up, and, you know, the women dusting themselves off, and then, like, the power walk forward.
They walk off stage alone, then reemerge together. You're not alone. You're not alone. You're not alone. The video is the centerpiece of a fundraising and awareness campaign to raise attention to violence against women. Jackson is calling the effort Impact Change. Proceeds will help her nonprofit assemble emergency care packages for victims of violence. She encourages people who want to support the cause to simply start a conversation. You're not alone. You are
not alone. That was Aaron Gottsacker, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
In response to rising levels of gun violence in schools across the nation, a second school district in Iowa has approved allowing staff members to carry guns on campus. They say personnel will be properly trained on how and when to use the weapons. But people opposed to the move say there are far better alternatives than to, quote, meet violence with violence on campus. Mark Morin has the story.
Though its campuses have not experienced serious gun violence to date, the Cherokee Community School Board is now the second in Iowa to allow school staff members to carry guns on campus and in classrooms. No one wants guns in school, said Superintendent Kimberly Lingenfelter, but we want bad guys with a gun even less. She described the board's approach to keeping kids safe as very measured and serious. Connie Ryan, who heads the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, says she understands there's a public health crisis in American schools, which includes firearms, but her organization thinks adding guns to the hips of educators is a leap, not just a step, in the wrong direction.
I think it's a dangerous proposition to have staff in the hallways, on the playground, possess and carry firearms in the midst of a school day.
Ryan points out that teachers and administrators are there to educate students and should focus on moving them to safety in the event of a crisis and calling 911 rather than trying to do the work of law enforcement. Ryan is opposed to having guns in the schools under any circumstances and believes there are always better alternatives than countering guns with more guns. She thinks the solution lies in keeping perpetrators off campus in the first place with enhanced security, locked doors, and other safety protocols.
It's a scary idea that we're going to then have a shootout in the middle of a school building with children nearby rather than calling 911.
Cherokee Community Schools joined Spirit Lake Schools, where the board voted in August to allow 10 staff members to carry firearms and receive training on how and when to use them. The Iowa Firearms Coalition has endorsed the decision, and Spirit Lake Schools have encouraged other districts in Iowa to follow suit, as long as the educators carrying weapons are properly trained. I'm Mark Moran, Iowa News Service.
Labor groups, workers, and legislative allies are urging Congress to support the new Restaurant Workers Bill of Rights. It's a document that calls for higher salaries, fairer schedules, paid time off, sick leave, the right to organize, and more. Suzanne Potter has more.
Food service workers and their allies are calling on Congress to support the new Restaurant Workers Bill of Rights, a document that calls for higher wages, better working conditions, and access to health care. The document calls on Congress to raise the federal minimum wage for tipped workers, which is $2.13 per hour and is the standard in 17 states. Dr. Seku Sebi is president and CEO of Restaurant Opportunities Centers United and Rock Action, which conducted a survey of more than 1,000 restaurant workers.
85% of them experienced wage loss. 91% received no compensation for working in hazardous conditions. 34% had no access to personal protective equipment. And 1 in 10 workers was forced to go to work while COVID positive.
The document calls for legislation to guarantee paid time off, sick leave, consistent schedules, health insurance benefits, and the right to form unions. Opponents of federal legislation on these issues cite concerns about the cost and say it is up to individual states to set and enforce labor protections. California is making progress. The governor recently signed a law creating a fast food council that will have the power to raise workers' wages and set working conditions. However, it is already being challenged. Olivia Tovar Urbina, a restaurant worker from Los Angeles, says she has worked in the field with long hours and low pay for 17 years.
As a worker, I know what I deserve, and this is my reason to call for a change. I believe the Restaurant Workers' Bill of Rights is going to be beneficial not only for me, but to many other workers. By protecting workers, improving our salary, and empowering our labor rights.
Sammy Shaven is the federal policy coordinator for the group Family Values at Work.
The Bill of Rights will ensure that all restaurant workers will be entitled to time to rest, time to heal, and to the security of continued income and a job to come back to. We can create a world with an economy based on care, equity, and respect for workers.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
President Biden made a surprise reference to the possibility of nuclear Armageddon in the war in Ukraine. but he may not be totally off base about the threat of nuclear weapons from Russia. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. President Biden surprised his top advisors along with everyone else when, at a fundraising event, he referred to Armageddon in the Ukraine war, Russia's possible use of a nuclear weapon. Though U.S. officials were quick to stress that they knew of no imminent threat by Russia, Biden's remark underscored recent reports suggesting deepening U.S. concern about what Putin might do as Russian forces retreat in Ukraine. The remark also was in response to Putin's increasingly frequent allusions to nuclear weapons, such as on September 21 when he said, quote, "If the territorial integrity of our country is threatened, we will without doubt use all available means to protect Russia and our people. This is not a bluff." Biden said, quote, "We have not faced the prospect of Armageddon since Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't think there's any such thing as the ability to easily use a tactical nuclear weapon and not end up with Armageddon." Putin may not agree, however. Nuclear weapons experts point to any number of limited nuclear weapon use available to him. For example, a nuclear display, such as a strike on a nuclear power plant or a high-altitude detonation. CNN reports that in direct communications between Washington and Moscow in the last several weeks, Putin has been told about the scale of the U.S. response should he use a nuclear weapon. Other sources indicate that the scale would be within the range of conventional weapons, presumably in order to reduce the chance of escalation to the nuclear level. How Putin would react to a NATO counterattack with conventional weapons is anybody's guess, since conventional weapons these days can be as destructive as some nuclear devices. The threat to use a tactical nuclear weapon is just one of the ways this crisis differs from the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis and makes this one even more difficult to negotiate a way out. The earlier crisis occurred because the Russians deployed long-range missiles in Cuba to correct the huge imbalance in U.S.-Soviet strategic nuclear forces, the infamous missile gap that actually favored the U.S. Kennedy and Khrushchev were able to craft a deal for the removal of Soviet missiles from Cuba because a face-saving trade was available, U.S. missiles removed from Turkey in exchange. The equivalent trade that might take place today, involving occupied territory, is rejected by Putin and, with U.S. support, by Ukraine's President Zelensky. Moreover, in 1962, Moscow and Washington were equally determined to avoid a nuclear showdown. They looked for a diplomatic off-ramp and found one. Vladimir Putin isn't looking. He's convinced that Ukraine must be expunged, or at least greatly diminished, and he evidently sees that as a way to weaken the West. So we have a real conundrum for policymakers. Putin's determination to wipe out Ukraine and avoid defeat might lead him to use a nuclear weapon. The West wants to avoid a nuclear response if he does, and no diplomatic off-ramp has yet to be discovered. What then can deter Putin? There's no lack of opinion on that subject. A former Swedish prime minister proposes 5 courses of action that might stop Putin from using a nuclear weapon. Regime change in Moscow as a war aim, strengthening Western resolve by bringing Ukraine into NATO, and mobilizing public opinion to win the war are among the ideas. Frankly, I think all of these ideas are more likely to provoke Putin than deter him. 2 RAND Corporation specialists consider Putin a rational actor who understands that any nuclear use makes little operational sense. Even if Putin isn't rational, they say, and acts out of humiliation or anger, use of a nuclear weapon would not cause Ukraine or the West to stop fighting. Well, about all one can say is maybe to such an analysis, and maybe when it comes to nuclear threats isn't good enough. A diplomatic approach, such as through the United Nations, doesn't offer much hope either. At the end of September, 66 nations announced their opposition to the war and said a ceasefire and negotiations must happen immediately. None, however, offered a plan for implementing a ceasefire, which the Secretary General himself recently discounted as a prospect. The idea was a sign of helplessness. So none of these opinions offers Putin an off-ramp, and by failing to do so, they leave only one future for the war: continued fighting until either defeat on the battlefield or exhaustion leads Russia or Ukraine to abandon its war aims. The Finnish Prime Minister, Sanna Marin, put it tersely: The way out of the conflict, she said, is for Russia to leave Ukraine. That reminds me of what we used to say about how to end the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. The way out is to get out. Now all we need is for Putin to listen. I'm Mel Gertov for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 25, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mark Moran, Roz Brown, Suzanne Potter, and Mary Sherman. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or just text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Totality of Circumstances with Sam Bowman and Jasmine Moneymaker.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is Totality of Circumstances. This is a monthly show currently focused on covering the progress of the Police Accountability Commission, a 20-member group of community volunteers tasked with creating a new, effective, and community-driven police oversight system. This process was set in motion by Portland voters in 2020, when City Measure 26